exist in the case of delusions, negative mind, we can stop it. Check ourselves out. How many years have we been doing Dharma? How many gurus have we chased? How many Rinpoches, how many divinations, how many things have we done? Why are we not transforming? Because the very motive might have been wrong, and along with that, wrong projection and a lack of merits. Very clear, very concise, very logical. So therefore, in the beginning, correct motivation is very important. In the middle, correct motivation is very important. And in the end, correct motivation is very important. When motivation is correct, there will be wonderful, positive, lasting results. There is definitely an end. On that logical basis I've just established, with your intelligent, educated minds, with your intelligence and your educated minds, I've established the fact that suffering can come to an end. Do you want it to come to an end? It is in your hands. So, we should have the motive to practice the Dharma, to go to a temple, see our gurus, enthusiastically, with perseverance, with great patience, with great love, with great understanding of the great value that can arise from there, by being free from the 8 worldly concerns, the 8 wrong motives, which is a guideline for developing our motivation. And the wrong motivation is also impermanent. It's dependent on causes. The cause is ignorance. Once you have been given wisdom and knowledge, ignorance is cut. When ignorance is cut, the very foundation for wrong motive is cut. So, what's left? Positive motive. It itself is impermanent. Therefore, we should be free to be... We should not have the motivation to do any action, especially Dharma action, to get praise, to avoid insult, to receive gifts, to be unhappy if we don't, to avoid bad reputation, to try to get good reputation, to try to receive comfort, and try to avoid comfort. It should be free of this. The motive should be enlightenment, freedom from suffering for everyone. I will get into that more tomorrow, about how to develop that compassion, step by step by step. I will get into that, and it's crucial, it's very important. We all want compassion, we like getting compassion, we like having compassion, we like being around compassion. So doesn't it behoove us to be compassionate? Now, everybody's talking about compassion, compassion, compassion. We talk about so much, when we see punyin, we run. Now we'll talk about how to develop it. So, the first line of the 8 verses of mind transformation is, with the determination to accomplish the highest welfare for all sentient beings, who excel even at wish-granting gems, may I at all times hold them dear. This book, everyone should try to get a copy. It is new, it's fabulous. It is from one of my root gurus, written by the great exalted Kenshin Gishitsurum Gensin Rinpoche, who is from Ganden Shate Monastery. And what I'm teaching is embodied in this book. After the teaching, if you get it and study, it'll be very good. It's from Wisdom Publications in the United States, Boston. Wisdom Publications. The book is called Compassion, The Key to Great Awakening. The Key to Great Awakening, Compassion. This everyone should try to get. I will leave this book here so that you can copy down its title, its author, whatever, and try to obtain it. I'm sure Bodhi Bookstore can order it for you. This is where I got my copy from. And then when you write down everything, then please replace the book back there. I'll need it for tomorrow. Try to get this. So the first line. With the determination to accomplish the highest welfare for all sentient beings, who excel even a wish-granting gem, may I at all times hold them dear. First of the 8 lines. I will read through the holy text and explain it, and then we will conclude after the first slide. If we follow the Tibetan text, it says that sentient beings are far more important than a wish-granting gem. This is because our achievement of the pureless state of a great awakening enlightenment is dependent on sentient beings. It is said that if we wash the wish-granting gem 3 times, polish it 3 times, hang it on top of a huge banner, and ask for anything, it can provide all of our basic food, water, necessities. Yet sentient beings are far more precious because their existence enables us to achieve the state of great awakening. No such claim can be made of a wish-granting gem. The key point is that if there was no sentient beings, there would be no individual awakening. Without sentient beings, there is no compassion. Without compassion, there is no bodhicitta. And without bodhicitta, there is no great awakening. Therefore, we say that the kindness of sentient beings and the kindness of the Buddhas are equal. The kindness of sentient beings and the kindness of the Buddhas are equal. I will go back to that. We understand the kindness of the Buddha. We know that the Buddha is extremely kind, and we feel grateful to the Buddha because he is the source of all of our teachings, the method to free ourselves. He taught the means or techniques of attaining great awakening. Without these techniques, awakening would not be possible. As an example, even if someone gave us an excellent machinery to till the land for growing food, it would be of no use to us if we did not have any land. Similarly, the great Shantideva says in the text Bodhisattva Jaravatara that sentient beings and Buddha are equal in terms of our awakening. We are dependent on both these factors to become enlightened. I will get back to it. A Buddha and sentient beings. Shantideva states that we have tremendous respect for all the Buddhas, but we have none for sentient beings. What kind of thinking is that? If the sentient beings are equal in bringing us to enlightenment, how can we respect Buddhas and not all sentient beings and hold them dear? Moreover, when we are trying to develop bodhicitta, it is the understanding that all sentient beings have been our mothers that serves as the foundation of bodhicitta. I will go on that point more tomorrow. Great compassion is the root of all great qualities and great achievements of the Mahayana practices. We develop great compassion in our mind by focusing on sentient beings. Since all of our immediate and ultimate happiness and prosperity originates from sentient beings, may we learn to hold them dear. It would be very helpful, especially for new students, to think about the kindness of other beings in our daily life. We need to think that all of our friends, enemies, and strangers are equally kind to us. If we think seriously, we can see that all food, clothing, and happiness that we have come directly or indirectly from other sentient beings. We manufacture hardly any of these things ourselves. For instance, when we were born, we had nothing but our naked bodies, and even that we owe to the kindness of our parents. In fact, we have to come into this world with nothing. Everything that we have now is due to the kindness of other sentient beings, directly and indirectly. Thus, we may say, by learning to hold them dear, we do not mean that we should hold their hands all the time, but rather we should understand their needs. We understand that what sentient beings need is happiness, and they detest suffering. Since we cherish them, we have to look for the means by which we can provide what they need and dispel what they dislike. That should be our personal responsibility. I ask you to do your own study. Imaginatively explore your own ideas. Read books, contemplate on the meeting, and do whatever you do to increase that understanding. So, with determination to accomplish the highest wealth of all sentient beings who even excel a wish-granting gem, may I learn to hold them dear. A wish-granting gem can grant your wishes, material wishes. You wash it 3 times, polish it 3 times, like a magic genie, put it on a banner, make your wish, it is able to grant it. Yet, it cannot still grant you freedom. Sentient beings are even more precious. All sentient beings, everyone around you, enemies, friends, neutral people, are very important to you because it is in dependence on them you get enlightenment. How is that? How do you practice patience if you have no enemies? To develop patience, full stop. And what Buddhas is there with no patience? What Buddhas exists with no patience? So we need to have patience, and the only way we develop it is someone helping us to develop patience. That's an enemy. So an enemy is just as precious as someone that benefits us, because without them, how do we practice patience? To become a Buddha with patience. There is the definition of a Buddha. One of them is that he has patience. So if we become a Buddha with no patience, we hate enemies and we're a Buddha, I don't think we'll end up on the altar. So think. So we need to practice generosity. Who do we give things to? The trees? Waterfalls? Mountains? I offer this gold to you, mountain. Throw it. It is sentient beings. It is They are very kind to allow us to help them. That we are able to practice the paramita of dana, giving. If we want to go one step higher to our dharma brothers and sisters, giving, helping, to the dharma institutions, to the sangha, and if possible, if we have one, our rupuru. It is their kindness that allows us to collect the paramita of giving. Every Buddha has tremendous spiritual and unlimited, inexhaustible wealth from giving. And where did that come from? Giving. Where did that come from? Giving to sentient beings. So, in order to develop wealth, in order to develop karma, to even be rich in your next life, it is dependent on others. So, when you are so dependent on others, how can we not respect others? They give us an opportunity to give. Likewise, enthusiasm, perseverance. We want to become a Buddha, so we must love every single sentient being that exists in the six realms. If let's say there's 5 billion sentient beings in this world, we love 4,999,999, and we don't love one for any reasons, guess what? You cannot become a Buddha. How can a Buddha love everyone except her? Except him? I love everyone. I love every single sentient being except that one. Think about it. So your actual enlightenment is dependent on every single sentient being. And your mood, akasa, and your attitude and motive toward them. So they are very kind to exist, to let you develop this. So if we show bad face, black face, bad talk, gossip, negativity, and shout and scream and hurt and abuse others, we don't realize how precious they are. They are just as precious as the Buddhas, equal to says in Bodhisattva Charavatara by Shantideva. They are equally important. So you think you can pray, kowtow, make offerings to the Buddha and the three jewels, your guru and sangha, turn around and abuse other sentient beings and get enlightened? You're in some weird cult, because that's not what the Buddha taught. So we've all been guilty, including myself, of following this weird cult. In front of the Buddha, we cast out, we prostrate, we have tears, we turn around, someone bothers us, hey! We've done that over and over and over. So we belong to this weird offshoot of a Buddhism, some weird Buddhist cult. We can call ourselves VCs. Think about it. The Buddhas are important, because we need teachings, we need their blessings, we need their inspiration, we need their guidance, we need the three jewels. We need them 50%. And in order to fulfill what they have taught us, where is the object to act out what they have taught us? That's right, sentient beings. That's right, all sentient beings. Neutral ones, hated ones, and loved ones. And the very fact you have hated ones and neutral ones in your vocabulary shows you are not practicing Dharma. Think. It's all so interconnected and so logical. So how can we just prostrate to the Buddhas, prostrate to the Sangha, prostrate to our Guru, to our altars, and not show equal, reverent respect to everybody else? Of course you don't have to run around with lotus candles and light one to everybody you meet and say, I respect you and pray to you. Of course you don't have to go that fanatical. The point, the issue here is to have a sincere respect for other sentient beings. That includes your wife that gets on your nerves, that nags. That includes your husband that gets on your nerves, that comes home from work at 11 o'clock. That includes your kids that don't stop shouting and screaming non-stop. That includes loving the guru that shouts at you. Yeah, that includes me, don't forget. That includes me too. And I reiterate that. So you've got to love me to become enlightened. So there you go. So you've got to love everyone. Everything. So we have to start somewhere. We should start with our gurus. We should start with our wives. We should start with our husbands. Have we been mistreating our wives? Have we been talking wrongly to our mates? Have we been mistreating our husband and talking wrongly to our husband, to our friends, to our relatives? Have we? If we have, think we're making progress here. And if we're not making progress, we're going to suffer. Of course, there are certain people that really get on our nerves. We don't have to jump in bed and hug them and kiss and say, I love you. We don't have to every corner grab them and kiss them and say, I love you, and hold your hands 24 hours and say, look, Guru, I'm practicing compassion. We don't have to do that. The point is, let them be the way they are, but don't hate them. You may avoid them for now, with the reason that you are not fully developed. Until you become developed, you don't have any hate, but you want to protect yourself for now. But that cannot go on forever. For the next 500 lives, I hate them, I want to protect myself, I stay away. So we've got to love all sentient beings to become enlightened. If we don't, how do we become enlightened? Impossible. Impossible. 50% on sentient beings. So we should start today, now, this moment, to start loving our wives. Start loving our husbands, start loving our children, our relatives, our parents, our aunts and uncles, Sangha members, our gurus, people that are neutral to us, people we just meet, and especially enemies. We should start. Stop kowtowing to the Buddhas, because that's just 50% of the game. If you kowtow to them, it means you will follow what they're saying. You kowtow because you respect what they are, what they represent, what they teach you. Therefore, you kowtow. So if you kowtow and you turn around and do the opposite, you should get a Grammy Award for your great acting. And we all should get a Grammy Award because we're the greatest actors on earth. All of us, think about it. It sounds funny, but it's true. That's why it's funny. So we have to respect everyone. We have to respect everything. We have to respect everyone. And we must start with the people that are most easiest to us. With all due respect again to your gurus, to the Sangha, to your Dharma brothers and sisters, in which you have the same teachers with, to fellow Dharma practitioners, to other religious practitioners, to neutral, to enemies. Without that deep respect, 50% of your practice is not there. So a table cannot stand with two legs. You need the other 50. It needs 4 to stand. Okay, you want to be smart, it needs 3 to stand on some tables. So we take 1.5 away, it cannot stand. Some people think, well, there are tables that have 3 legs. Okay, 3 legs, 1.5 gone. So think about it. We need to start practicing this, the first statement. If we practice this sheet alone, we can gain enlightenment. No joke. If we practice this alone, without initiations, without altars, without deities, without nothing. If we practice this from our heart, if we practice the first line and put it into real practice, many of our sufferings will stop. With the determination of accomplishing the highest work for all sentient beings who excel even a wish-granting gem, may I learn to hold them dear. Whenever I associate with others, may I think myself the humblest among all and hold others supreme in the depth of my heart. First line, with the determination to accomplish the highest welfare. What's that? With the determination to accomplish the highest welfare. What's the highest welfare for all sentient beings? When you become a Buddha. So with the determination of becoming a Buddha, who, therefore, all sentient beings are greater than the wish-fulfilling gem, and may I at all times hold them dear. If we had problems, we should apologize. If we have difficulties, we should make up. And we should see the root of the problem and stop it from our side. Whether the other person stops it or not, never mind. That's not your problem. When you die alone. When you go alone. When you make karma alone. So we should respect our teachers, we respect the Sangha, we should respect our wives, our husbands, our mates, everything. We should start now. Without them, we can't become enlightened. I love everybody except my wife. Today. I love everybody except my husband. Today. You ain't becoming a Buddha. Far from it. Think, it's logical. So please, practice that first line. That first line has such deep meaning. Let's become real Dharma practitioners. We've received the first line, let's put it into action, let's make it stable, and let's make it constant. And let's support it and make it constant and stable by making offerings to the three jewels, prostrations, meditations on meditational deities, mantras, etc., etc. I will conclude here. It's 10:33. I thank you all very much for coming tonight. Please, I hope to see you all tomorrow night. Not that I don't have enough people to shout at and scream at, because I sincerely would like to pass these holy teachings on to all of you. I feel it will be very, very beneficial. I feel it will be very, very enlightening. And this is the essence of Buddha's teachings. So I would like to have the honor to be able to pass these holy teachings on to you, and that you may practice it, and that you, in future, when you become senior Dharma members, in fact, teach it to others. Relay it to others, to help others with it. And if you practice these, you will transform your lives. So please give me the opportunity to be able to contribute toward that, because I need you to become enlightened too. Yes, I'm using you, you caught me. So, I will be here just for a few days. Please make the time, make the effort to join the Dharma and listen to the Holy Dharma so we can practice. In order to practice, we need knowledge. To get knowledge, we must listen. So since you have an affinity with this crazy, I don't know, American, Tibetan, Eastern Chinese monk here that looks like you but doesn't talk like you, you have this weird affinity, let's take advantage of it for a few days. Again, I thank you very much. All the virtues, and tomorrow, please start at 7:30, and then we finish around 9:30, we can go home and wash out our ears because this crazy monk's voice gets on our nerves. The meaning is good, but the voice is really grating on me. So we can get out early. Please make your best efforts, and I beg you and I implore all of you, my old friends and my new friends, to please put this teaching into practice. This moment, strong, where there is a perversion or misunderstanding of Dharma, may it become clear. We dedicated that all the great lamas, all the great teachers and masters of all the religious traditions in the world, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, all the great masters and their disciples have long life, excellent health and happiness. May their temples and may their good teachings grow and be able to benefit others. We also dedicate that His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama and all the great masters of the four lineages and their students have long life, health, and excellence, and may their precious enlightened prayers come to fruition. And I pray also that at dawn or dusk, at night or midday, may the three jewels grant us their blessings, may they help us to achieve all realizations and sprinkle the path of our lives with signs of auspiciousness. May we gain bodhicitta and realization shunyata, and at that may we gain full enlightenment. And when we gain full enlightenment, we don't run to Amitabha heaven, get on a nice red couch and relax and sleep and just be free and happy, but to come back again and again to serve sentient beings until the end of time. Until the last sentient being is finished from suffering, may I continue to take rebirth again and again and again to benefit others. Please pray like that and that power will come. So while I chant the holy verses, please think about what I just shared with you. And please think strongly. If you cannot remember all the details, think whatever that monk has just told me, let it be so. So I can't trick you because I said it already. If I tell you to let it be so what I'm thinking, of course I can trick you. May I become rich, you dedicated toward that. No. So I've told you what to dedicate toward.
Nimu 마지 순정과 이시루 너지게 모든 어디서 주기며 모성과 봐 주기며 모성과 배워 너 기진세 마시와 너 지지 모든 성화 하반식의 뜻으로 제외 소리 못된 여호보사 사과 내마 유리의 마주
Thank you very much. Good night. Have a seat, turning form.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Okay, Matt. Huh? Good, huh? Okay, Matt. So I'm off, huh?
Like this, I will do most of it in Tibetan, and we can rush it up, and then we'll recite it 8 verses together, because that's the most important thing, at the same time.
Guru Master Bhagavan Tathagata Arhat, complete perfect Buddha, glorious conqueror Shakyamuni. To you I prostrate, go for refuge in the offerings, please grant your inspiration.
Teyata Om Muni Muni Ma Muni Shakyamuni Yeso Ha Teyata Om Muni Muni Ma Muni Shakyamuni Yeso Ha Teyata Om Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Yeso Ha Teyata Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Yeso Ha Teyata Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Yeso Ha Teyata Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Yeso
Ha. Buddha is unequaled as a teacher and guide. The venerable protector Maitreya will be his successor. The exalted Aryasangha has been prophesied by Buddha. From you three Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, I request inspiration. From you three Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, I request inspiration. From you three Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, I request inspiration. Buddha, head of the Shakya clan, is the foremost guide, peerless in expounding emptiness. Manjushri is the epitome of the Buddha's complete wisdom. The exalted Nagarjuna, best of the Aryas, has seen the full meaning of profound emptiness. From you three crowning jewels of clear exposition, I request inspiration. I request inspiration. I request inspiration. Having reached the high state by following your master's instructions, you have shown wandering beings what you have seen. You are authorized to reveal the excellent path at your feet. Arya Deva, I request inspiration. I request inspiration. I request inspiration. Chandrakirti has elucidated the theme of Arya Nagarjuna's teachings. The great Vidya Gokila, the elder, has been his spiritual son. The exalted second Vidya Gokila has been a true bodhisattva. From you three lords of wisdom, I request inspiration. I request inspiration. I request inspiration. As soon as even a glittering syllable of the name of the Bodhisattva Shantideva enters the ears of the fortunate ones, it eliminates their mental darkness. For the exalted Shantideva, I request inspiration. For the exalted Shantideva, I request inspiration. From the exalted Shantideva, I request inspiration. O holder of the white lotus, embodiment of all the conqueror's compassion, who appears as a guide of the land of the snow mountains for the sake of wandering beings, you are the sole deity and refuge of beings. At your feet, Dalai Lama Tenzin Gyatso, I request inspiration. Dalai Lama Tenzin Gyatso, I request inspiration. Dalai Lama Tenzin Gyatso, I request inspiration. These gurus, moved by loving compassion, make the Dharma clear by teaching with skillful and effective means. They are the best bridges for all those of good fortune to cross to liberation, and the eyes for all, for seeing all the vast scriptural texts. From all you gurus, I request inspiration. I request inspiration. I request inspiration. May I never develop for even a moment wrong views toward the deeds of my glorious gurus. With faith and respect gained from seeing their goodness, may the guru's inspiration flow into my mind. May I never develop for even a moment wrong views toward the deeds of my glorious gurus. With faith and respect gained from seeing their goodness, may the guru's inspiration flow into my mind. May I never develop for even a moment wrong views toward the deeds of my gurus. With faith and respect gained from seeing their goodness, may the Guru's inspiration flow into my mind, flow into my mind, flow into my mind.
Majing,
did, then as I explained, and everyone here, the phones are working. Okay. Then, as I explained yesterday, it's very important that before any kind of Dhamma activity or before any type of Dhamma, if a little bit crowded, maybe 5-6 people come up here and sit, then a little bit crowded, no problem, can move up. Otherwise, too far, cannot hear. Can move up. But be careful, the video. And move up, move up. Move up just enough, you can just see my nose. You don't need to see neck and chest, just my nose. Come, move up, move up. The people less crowded. Ah. Okay, can see my nose? Okay. Move up. Come, move up, move up.
You still want a chair?
You already come. You come with monks. So you sit here. You sit with monks, cannot run around, no? You have to think you're a monk.
I think
you're a chair. Move up, move up, and less crowded. Here, maybe 3 people can sit here. This, maybe we bring chair for him. And he can sit through the wall. This older gentleman here.
Yeah, all right.
Rufus, just give pillow. It's okay, okay. Yeah. Otherwise, bring chair.
Alright, give the chair.
Then, as I described yesterday, and I will describe today again, which is very important, is to be free, akasa, to have an extremely good motivation in order to listen to the Holy Dharma, in order to engage in spiritual practice, and in general, if we want to have a wide perspective to karsa, do any action. And someone was under the myth that I might be teaching for 4 or 5 hours last night. Surprise, I broke my usual pattern. I broke up an hour. Tonight also, we'll definitely conclude early. We have time around 9:30, so we'll do our best. If I'm 10, 15 minutes late, never mind. Just a few days, all right? Definitely, we won't be here till 1 a.m. So, most important to me, any kind of Dharma action previous to it, prior to it, is that we develop an extremely good motivation. For the newcomers that have come, a few new people have come, welcome, very happy to see all of you. Let me go over yesterday's talk and yesterday what we have done, but in brief, in very, very brief, so that nothing is left out and no one feels left out. And also what I taught yesterday in detail, I will tell in very short brief today, and give you the oral transmission. So it's very, very important. Then, karsa. Yeah, Mr. Cha can come here. Here's this. Dante, come here. Come. Here more room. Come. Here. Ruby, you show me. Come here. More space. So, very important that we develop a sincere and good motivation. Any Dharma action that we do, or any action that we do thinking that it's Dharma, will not become Dharma unless the motivation is correct. So if the motivation is not correct, then it cannot be Dharma practice. Definitely cannot be Dharma practice. Therefore, the motivation must be absolutely correct. Yeah. Can't you keep my new one? Keep on keeping. Shasai. Wash up, wash up. Ah, yes, I shall. Come on. But it's so dumb, shall. Okay. Then, the next people that comes, we're going to have to clear out the office, put them on the altar. They have good view. Balcony view. So anyways, if we are to do any Dharma actions or Dharma practice, it must be preceded. Very importantly, that we have a good motivation. Without good motivation, then it does not become Dharma practice at all. So very important, we must have excellent and wonderful motivation. Now you may think that all Tibetan lamas, monks are always talking about good motivation, good motivation. What is the good motivation? Good motivation is, if we want a simple and short and easy guideline, any actions that we do that is free from the 8 worldly worldly concerns, or the eight worldly dharmas, or the eight worldly practices. There are many translations for that, but you can use any of those that you feel comfortable. The eight worldly concerns, the eight mundane concerns. When we have any of the eight mundane concerns, then it does not become dharma practice. Okay, let me see the sheet. Oh yeah, okay, that's it. So the eight mundane concerns is, if we do dharma practice, if we go to dharma centers, if we do dharma activity, if we meditate, if we pray, if we recite mantras, if we receive initiations and blessings, if we do pujas, if we give dana to monks, if we do any of those actions with the motive, with the following eight motives, then it disqualifies us as being a dharma practitioner. So the eight worldly motives or the eight worldly concerns that we have the danger of doing is, number one, to do dharma practice with the concern to be happy when we are praised. To do dharma to have praise. To do dharma to avoid insults. To do dharma to receive gifts. To do dharma to avoid not receiving gifts. To do dharma for achieving good reputation. To do dharma to avoid being unsuccessful. To do dharma to become very comfortable. And to practice or do dharma to avoid unhappiness. Now you may say the purpose of dharma is to become happiness. Happiness here is not defined as happiness for the self alone. It is happiness for all sentient beings. So if we do dharma for happiness for the self alone, then that disqualifies us as a Mahayana dharma practitioner or a dharma practitioner. And Mahayana or un-Mahayana, we cannot become a Buddha without the qualification of wishing sentient beings metta and love and wishing them to be free from sufferings. Because the definition of a Buddha, one of the definitions of the Buddha is that he has that quality or she has that quality. Therefore, without that quality, whatever labels you like to put, Mahayana, non-Mahayana, labels are just labels, but we cannot achieve Buddhahood. So we may think, if I go to a Dharma center, if I give donations, if I give help and assistance, my friends will praise me, my Dharma brothers and sisters will praise me, I will get praise and people will like me and people will think I'm good. So for this reason, I will give donations, I will support the Sangha, I will listen to the Dharma, I will go and attend a Dharma teaching so that people will think I'm good. So, that is to be avoided. For example, if we practice Dharma with the wish that we become praised or we get praise, the very act of Dharma becomes an instrument for us to increase our arrogance and ego and self-cherishing mind. Why? When we do Dharma practice to get praise, the purpose of Dharma practice is not to get praise. The purpose of Dharma practice is to reduce the ego and arrogance. Therefore, praise, there's a danger that we increase arrogance, increase that need to be praised. Therefore, when we do Dharma practice, and our sole intention is to be praised, that Dharma practice, although the practice itself is good, is not used in the correct way. So if I do Dharma, I will be praised, people will think I'm good. Society will think I'm good, and when society thinks I'm good, other business people think I'm good, I'll get more business. Maybe I'll donate to that temple because my friends are doing it, so I won't be left out. I'll be praised. Any of those motives, the hard work, the hard energy, perhaps the finances that you have put into it, will become a waste in the sense that it cannot achieve its ultimate purpose, freedom from samsara, freedom from unhappiness. Whereas the wealth that you give can change your luck a little, to bring further wealth. But that's very fleeting in comparison to freedom from samsara. The wealth there is incomparable. Incomparable, you cannot compare. So very important, when we do dharma practice with the intention that we will get praise, then definitely the dharma practice, instead of becoming a source or a method for us to be free from suffering and unhappiness, it becomes something that increases our need for praise. And when we don't get praise, we
suffer, we get angry, we get despondent, we do not want to practice, and we think about abandoning practice, and we have the danger of giving it up temporarily or altogether. So it is not the Dharma that's wrong, it is not the practice that is wrong, but it is the actual intention or the actual motivation that was initially created in your mind before you even did the Dharma practice. So when we do Dharma practice with any of the eight worldly concerns, it does not become Dharma practice. It becomes an object to fulfill our worldly desires, our satisfactions, our worldly wants and needs that only bring temporary relief to our sufferings. It cannot bring the ultimate relief, which is freedom from samsara. Therefore, when we do any work, when we do any Dharma practice or any action, it has to be free from the eight worldly concerns. It has to be. We have to check. In fact, it would be very good if we can memorize the eight worldly concerns. Memorize it, put it, commit it to memory, and make sure that we can recite it every day. People like to recite a lot of mantras. People like to recite a lot of long sadhanas and intricate, complicated deities with a lot of heads, a lot of arms, a lot of legs, a lot of consorts. And how many legs, how many arms, how many consorts, what their colors, what they're carrying, their hands, you can't even remember. But we like to have those pictures and have those statues and go to those initiations and flash to our friends and tell them how holy, intricate, and complicated and how high we are with these high initiations. But in the end, when we check, the very fact that we like to flash it to our friends shows that the motive is incorrect. I am not here to criticize you, and I'm not here to tell you that all of you have these worldly motivations and that you're all so naughty. I'm here to just give you a general explanation. I'm sure you don't have these kind of motives when you come to receive the Dharma, but it's better to know what motive you don't have. It's better to understand it intellectually. It's better to understand it well, and then you can definitely put it into practice and make it stronger. And in order for you to not have those type of motives, you must understand them, the faults behind them, what they are, recognize them. And that can only come from hearing about them. So it's very, very important. We should not think that the Dharma is insulting us. We should think that the Dharma is a mirror for us to reflect our actions within. So whatever we do, we reflect it in the mirror of Dharma to see if we are doing it correctly or not. So the Dharma should be treated like a mirror. The Dharma teacher should be the mirror holder. And the Sangha should be the ones polishing the mirror. Something like that. And we are the ones looking into the mirror. So therefore, okay, if you don't want someone to hold your mirror, your guru can be the wall that the mirror hangs on. If you want to be complicated. So, in any case, you need a support for the mirror itself, and then people that clean it. So, very important. We should see the Dharma as a mirror for us to reflect our actions. And when we commit or when we do any type of actions, we should immediately check it with the Dharma to see if it's correct or not. If it is not, we should not feel insulted. We should not feel despondent. We should not feel that I can't do it. In fact, we should be very happy that there's something to check it with to improve. We have a guideline. We have a guideline. Life is full of guidelines. Life is full of rules and regulations and guidelines. If certain guidelines are followed well, and rules and regulations that are followed well, it definitely brings a lot of benefit to us. A lot of benefit, no chaos. So like that, the rules and guidelines, or rather the guidelines that Buddha explained, is the Dharma. If we follow those guidelines step by step by step, definitely there will be a result. So, to become unhappy when we become insulted. So, we may go to a Dharma center, we may be with our Dharma friends, and one of our Dharma friends constructively criticizes that we've done this practice or this thing wrong. When we become angry, we become insulted, we don't like it, we feel hurt, and therefore we don't want to practice, therefore we don't want to make offerings, therefore we don't want to be involved, therefore we run away. Dharma never suffers, your guru never suffers, the sangha never suffers, your karma suffers, you yourself suffer. For every day that you are away from the Dharma, and every day you are away from doing actions of Dharma, is a day that you have lost in being able to have to practice the opportunity to be free from samsara. So if we practice the Dharma to avoid insults, the very practice, that very motive of practicing the Dharma will in fact bring insults. In fact, eventually. So then, to be happy to receive any gifts, to receive some reward, to expect something back. Or if I do this Dharma practice, I should get this back. Or if I help the center, if I help my teacher, if I help the Sangha, if I help my Dharma brothers and sisters, I should get something back. Oh, you know, I did so much for them. Boasting, and I got nothing back, and no one appreciated me. Appreciation is a type of gift that we expect, an emotional, psychological gift. Oh, no one gave me anything back. I'm not going to practice the Dharma. I'm going out tonight. Forget it. Then if you think like that, think deeper, one step deeper. The very reason you practice Dharma is not to receive any type of mental or physical gifts. The reason you're practicing Dharma is to understand and learn the ways in which you can become free from all types of inner and outer sufferings. So your goal and your aim is to eliminate inner and outer sufferings on a lower scope, on a higher and more admired scope, to free the sufferings of us and other sentient beings. So when you go to a certain place and no one appreciates what you have done, the very fact you even think about that shows your motive is wrong. The very fact that you think about it, you want it, and you expect it, shows that your motive is wrong. With all due respect, that your motive is wrong. So when we do Dharma practice, when we go to Dharma centers and we contribute to it, when we contribute to our gurus, when we contribute to Dharma centers, when we contribute to the sanghas or Dharma institutions, the motive is these institutions or these objects or our help and service will benefit others. Out of great compassion and the need to benefit and help others, I wish to help my guru. I wish to help the sangha. I wish to help the temple. I wish to help the monastery. I wish to help printing of books. I wish to teach my friend the Dharma. I wish to bring my friend to the Dharma center, etc., etc., etc. The very motive that you should have in helping any of the objects of refuge or their institutions is other sentient beings. You should not do it to curry the favor of your teacher so you can get private audiences for hours on end about divinations about business. You should not curry the favors of Tsongkhapa and Buddha and etc. that you hit the lucky D if you make a lot of candle offerings to them. Help or donations to center thinking, oh, it's going to change my luck and I can finally meet that nice girl that I've been wanting to meet. Because that's not the motive behind doing any kind of work. The very deep and the real motive that is long-lasting and beneficial is that I will do these things and service and help and assist the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha, and their institutions and their assistants, in order that they can bring more Dharma to others. So, when you put $1 in the donation box, and you put $1 and say, oh, may my business grow, you will get the karma that contributes to your business growing definitely. But once your business starts to grow, when the karma finishes, your business goes down. Once your business grows, the karma for that donation is finished. The karma has been wasted. Whereas if you put $1 in the donation, $1 toward hospitals, even $1 toward save the children in stores we see, anything, and we have the motive that may this $1 from my sincere heart benefit other sentient beings. In this case, may this center grow, or centers grow, and may this Dharma institution be sustained and grow so it can benefit others. When you do that, however many people come to this Dharma institution, however many people come and pray, get their wishes fulfilled, meet their teachers, do pujas, learn and study here, every single person that's benefited, you will get the merits. How long will you get the merits? As long as that Dharma institution exists. So, when you do that kind of motivation, automatically under that will be good business, long life, health, happiness, and other worldly wants automatically become achieved, because those motives and those actions are lesser. So to achieve the higher, you definitely have to go through the lesser to go to the higher. So you have to go through all the lower motivations to get to the higher. Therefore, if you dedicated that all sentient beings may become enlightened and free from suffering, therefore I will support this particular Dharma institution, and you put in even 50 cents. That karma will never exhaust until sentient beings are exhausted. So that karma will benefit you in this life, in future lives, in future lives, in future lives. And by making that very motive and that very prayer that may all sentient beings be free from suffering and unhappiness, you automatically collect the karma that you will be free from unhappiness and suffering, which is the state of Buddhahood. Therefore, that action propels you to become a Buddha. And in order to become a Buddha, you need the 18 opportunities of a good human life, such as good food, good environment, health, long life, the five senses intact, Dharma, teachers, etc., etc. You need money, you need to have a good job, you need to have stability and harmony. So in order to achieve that enlightened state, you need these worldly supportive factors to achieve that state. Therefore, when you make such a motivation, all the supportive factors are automatically included. Automatically. So let's say, wealth, long life, health, reputation, enlightenment. So if you dedicate your merits and do actions on the basis of any of these, once it gets here, it stops here, it finishes here. It cannot go beyond. Whereas if you dedicate it toward the freedom of all sufferings of sentient beings, that you may become a Buddha, that you may become a Buddha, you have dedicated that action toward this. To achieve this, you must have all of this. Automatically, this is achieved. Automatically. Example, Mother Teresa never ever runs after money or wealth or position or power or praise. Never runs after any of that. Sitting knee is always running after praise, power, position. Always running after that. How come the one running after it never gets it, the one that's not running after it gets it? It proves to you that this kind of thought is correct. So when you dedicate your actions, or you make your motivation high from the beginning, and train it to be high from the beginning, it will definitely bring high and positive results from the beginning. Whereas if you have a low or incorrect motivation, don't think that $1 has been wasted. It has not. But the point here is it has not received its full potential. So if you sweep the temple floor with the hope that all the committee members will come and pat you on the back and say you're wonderful, they'll come and pat you on the back and say you're wonderful, and that's it. The merit is gone. You sweat for nothing, you sweep up, you did the work, finished. I will sweep out the temple so that when my guru comes, it will be clean. When the Sangha sits, it will be clean, it will be pleasant and good for the Dharma practice. And when my Dharma brothers and sisters come, they will have a clean and wonderful place to learn the holy Dharma. And by this action, may my mind become fully purified and clean to become a Buddha. Therefore, I will sweep the temple. Big difference. Big, big difference. So when we had that kind of motive, the first action of sweeping out the temple becomes an action that increases the need for praise. And when you don't get it, you suffer. The second motive of sweeping the temple becomes an act that in fact plants the seeds and the merits for you to become a Buddha. And everything under that is automatically achieved. So motivation is very important. Therefore, what's the correct motivations that we must have? The guidelines are the 8 worldly concerns to be avoided. So that's in short. We had a much extensive explanation of that yesterday. I think it's on tape for people who would like it, all right? I'm not asking you to get the tape because I think I'm a superstar, but I think the words might benefit you, all right? To become, the eight worldly concerns are to become happy when we are praised, to practice the Dharma, to become happy when we are praised, to become unhappy if we are insulted, to be happy if we receive any gifts, to be unhappy if we don't, to be happy upon achieving reputation, to be unhappy when we are unsuccessful, to be happy when we are comfortable, to be unhappy when we are not. So if we do Dharma practice with any of those eight worldly motives, it will not equate it to be Dharma practice. So it's not the act or the action that makes it Dharma, but it is the motive. So being in a temple and offering incense and meditating 3 hours, no end, does not make it a Dharma motivation or Dharma action. It does not necessarily become a Dharma action if the motivation is not correct. But if you sit in the temple for a few minutes and offer incense and pray that you may become a fully enlightened being, and do prayers toward that achievement, it becomes a Dharma action. Becomes a Dharma action. So therefore, if you're going to spend this much time, this much energy, this much effort, like all of you are tonight, and you put up with so much pain in your legs, you take away from your busy schedule, you keep awake and go to home later than usual and sacrifice relaxation after a hard day's work, and even some of you use up your hard-earned money toward the temple, if you're going to do all these actions, which is so much effort, there's so much effort involved, then I give you the method to get the best benefit out of it. So the avoidance of the eight worldly concerns are the guidelines to train our motivation and transform our motivation step